Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, or good evening, or wherever you're at, whatever time it is. First off, thank you very much for taking the time to be a part of Make It Better. One of the things that we always appreciate is that folks don't have a lot of times these days, especially app builders such as yourselves and designers such as yourselves. So we always really truly do appreciate when you all take time out of your busy schedule to spend it with us, and hopefully you'll find the next 4 hours valuable. So I'm Tommy Lewis. I'm a technical evangelist here in Microsoft Canada. I'm actually broadcasting from one of our local offices in Vancouver, and you'll be hearing from other speakers as well all across Canada, including Toronto and other great places like that. So what I'm going to do in the brief amount of time that I have with you all, we're going to talk about a few things. So, of course, we're going to talk about apps. That's primarily why people are tuning into this, and we'll have some good stuff there. I'm also going to spend a bit of time around design thinking. What we find is that when we look at folks who are very successful in building apps, usually it isn't someone who just sort of thought of an idea and just started coding right away. Usually it's people who have really kind of taken the time beforehand to sort of think about what they're going to do, iterate on that before actually writing the code. And so we'll talk about that a bit. Then, of course, we can't have a design discussion without talking about the design principles around what we do, and just want to kind of give you sort of a backdrop of how we think about things. And what you'll probably notice is that the way that we're thinking about design really is crossing all the different types of platforms. So if you do Windows, Windows Phone, or Xbox, you'll see that we have this sort of design principles or design philosophies that really kind of permeate through that. And in fact, even if you look at the new Azure portal, you're starting to see a bit of those design principles come out as well. And of course, if we have time, we'll do some Q&A. So there is the chat window that you should see on the website that you can put your questions in, and we'll make sure to try to get those answered. And of course, afterwards as well, if you needed to ask any questions that you didn't get to ask, we will make some way for you to get questions to us, and we will follow up with you all. So with that, let's start off with talking about apps, apps, and apps. And so it's probably no surprise to anyone, no matter kind of what app platform you look at, is that there are just a lot of apps, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of apps. We are not sort of in this world anymore of we will build it and they will come. You know, I'll build an app and of course people are just going to start, you know, finding it and downloading it and things like that. What we're starting to learn is that there are sort of these different tips and tricks, and I'll show you this screen here. And there's these tips and tricks that we've kind of found out that we think are very helpful, and you'll hear about these throughout the time that we have together. But one of the things that you should think about is really the design of your app. It really stands out when it comes to people looking at apps. Our studies show that when people are sort of evaluating an app. So, for example, if you go to the Windows 8 store today, you type in search on weather, you're going to get over 250 weather apps. So, as you can imagine, it's not a matter of someone going through each and every one of them and reading feature lists and things like that. A lot of times what they're going to do is they're going to simply look at, what does the app look like? What do the different screenshots look like? What do the screenshots show me? So one of the things you'll hear a lot, especially when we talk about the store later on, is you'll find that we really say, hey, make sure that, you know, at the end when you're kind of hurrying up to get your app submitted, make sure you take time to actually think about, like, what are the things that I'm going to show? Because you may have spent tons of time writing code, good code, with really interesting features, but maybe people aren't even going to be able to see those unless the, you know, unless the screenshots that you have actually represent the work that you did. So I always tell people, as much as you think about the code and performance and things like that, you should also make sure that you're thinking about how am I presenting my app in the best light, especially when there are so many different apps vying for people's attention. So let's talk a little bit about design thinking. And these will be just a few kind of tips and tricks that we talk with people. So, for example, one of the things that we do as evangelists is we sit with different customers and communities and things like that, and we actually review apps with folks. One of the things that I do here in Vancouver is I actually am at a startup company called Launch Academy. It's a startup place with a lot of different startups, and we have these office hours. And we do is we have people bring in their Windows 8 apps or Windows Phone apps, and we'll actually kind of work with them to figure out, how do we make sure that the quality is good and that the app is shown in its best light and things like that. And what we find is that, people who sort of started off doing some of the right things, usually there's a lot less of that feedback of you need to do this, you need to do that, because a lot of those things that maybe you were kind of thinking about and pondering through, you can find very easy early in the process. And one of the things that we all know in development is that you always want to find your challenges much earlier in the process, because again, if you're in sort of the planning phase or the kind of infancy of designing your app, it's a lot less expensive to make a change in how you were thinking about doing something than when you already have the bits, or you already have something, in the store. So what we do is we say, the best thing to do is sort of embrace this sort of design process. And the kind of, early set on is, first off, defining what it is that you're going to build. One of the things that a lot of people do is they kind of get an idea and they go, oh, this will be great. I'm going to build a, weather app. Well, as we've just said, there's over 250 weather apps, and I'm sure there's even more in the Windows Phone Store. What you need to do is define what is your app going to do and kind of what is that differentiator. Like when we sit down and we review an app with someone, we ask, what is your one sentence pitch? And part of that pitch should be why, what makes my app different than all the other apps that are out there? Because if you can't even do that, then really you need to sort of take a step back and figure out like, well, what is going to make mine different than all the other ones that are out there? The second phase, and we'll talk about this some more, is kind of the exploratory phase. Some people call this the ideation phase, and there's all different kinds of words. But basically, what it is you're exploring all options, and you're giving yourself the ability to explore, as well as bring in other people. And a lot of times, again, what happens is people sort of get in their heads like, oh, this is what we're going to do, without really sort of talking to other people and trying to figure out what it is that they want. I've always said like one of the easiest ways to, test whether your app or your app description is sound is talk to your spouse, especially if your spouse is in a non-technical world. It's kind of interesting because they can very quickly out whether you know what you're talking about or if you are just building something that no one would be interested in. So I always suggest the spouse test or the family test or what have you. Then what you'll want to do is you'll want to build these visual concepts, and we'll talk about that a bit more. Then from there, you'll sort of refine those concepts, and then of course, when you finally commit to the visual concepts, then you'll go ahead and start actually building out the product and then, putting out a release. And so this is sort of the process, but one of the things you'll notice is that before, as we were going through that, we weren't necessarily talking about code right away. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to have a waterfall model where every single thing is going to be absolutely done before we write any code, because if you are in a, multi-person team, you might have some folks, working on design. You might have some folks who are working more directly on code and, you know, trying things out. But what should happen is all of those folks should work together. So it shouldn't be sort of a, hey, the designers design something, throw it over the wall, and then the engineers have to implement it. It should be something where they're both working together. So one of the things we always suggest is to come up with the user personas. This is very beneficial because sometimes what will happen is I will ask someone, and I'll say, hey, you know, who are you building this app for? And they'll say, well, I'm building it for anyone. And I go, perfect. I said, I know a bunch of toddlers who would want to use your app. And then they say, whoa, no, it's not really for toddlers necessarily. It's for, you know, and then, you know, I'll say, okay, great. You know, my 70-year-old grandmother, you know, I think she would, you know, love this kind of thing. Oh, well, no, it's really more for this. And so what we find out is that most of the time when people say it's for everyone, it truly isn't for everyone. Also, too, if your app is for everyone, then you are more than likely, I would say probably 90% of the time, going to find yourself in scope creep because you have no constraints as to who you're writing this app for. So what we always do is we say, you know, make sure that you identify not only your users, but even take it that next step and create a concept of user persona. So here, for example, you can see that we have a persona for Anna, and we kind of, you know, go through, like, what is the attitudes that Anna has? What is her personal life like? And these are really good because what, again, is it gets you to focus on who your app is going to be best for. Also, too, what you'll find is that when you get kind of past when you've got your app already in the store, you actually are able to use your user persona as a part of your marketing as well. So you can figure out, like, hey, where do I need to tell people, you know, that I have this app? You know, do I go to, you know, teen sites? Do I go to mommy blogs? Do I go to game, you know, communities? The good thing is that your user persona is something that you'll spend some time on it, but it really will kind of create those dividends as you keep going on. We also tell people, you know, take time to explore and brainstorm. I think, again, what happens is a lot of times that we get excited and we built something and we just want to go in and start coding away, right? We just want to get something in the store as quick as possible. But the thing is that it when you spend some time exploring and brainstorming and things like that, it really allows you to sort of think maybe even bigger than what you thought that you were going to do. Or you might find someone who has sort of a different perspective that can really sort of open up your app. It's not unusual at all when you brainstorm with friends or colleagues or what have you that someone will sort of come up with something and you'll just be like, wow, I never really thought about that. And so I always, you know, encourage people, you know, talk to other folks. Now, you don't have to set up sort of a brainstorm and everyone needs to put on, you know, black turtlenecks and things like that. It really can be just your friends, right? Saying, hey, you know, do you mind if I grab a cup of coffee with you and talk to you about this thing that I'm doing? And I'd love to get your input and insight. It doesn't mean that you're going to take every single thing they say and implement it. But again, you might find that they have a need that maybe you didn't really think about or you didn't think was very much a priority. And in your minimum viable product that you build, you may be able to go, wow, they really had something interesting there. I'm going to maybe pivot a little bit more onto the needs that they had versus what I thought would just be sort of something that's cool. And a part of this brainstorming, you know, should be wide open. You know, they always say that there's no bad ideas in brainstorming. You know, absolutely, you want to get different types of ideas because maybe it's something that you can't do for your first minimum viable product. But when you begin to kind of work on that second, you know, version of it or an update, you can look back and say, oh, yeah, you know what? There was a couple of good things there that we weren't able to deal with because we were trying to get the first release out. And instead, now we can go back and, you know, start implementing those. So don't be afraid to spend a little bit of time finding out, is there other things that maybe, you know, are going to be more beneficial? Or maybe, you know, even bring in, again, people who aren't, techies or aren't developers. Think about, again, if you're writing an app for someone, ask the people who, you think would use it. What do you need? What are the important things? And again, what you'll find is that even this little amount of time that you do, again, it's going to actually pay off huge, huge dividends in the end. So at this point, you have your concept, you understand how you're differentiated from others, you've gotten some really good feedback into your idea, and you're now at the point where you're like, okay, now I need to start fleshing out how I look at the app. And then we get to this concept of wireframing, where you're really basically drawing out how you think that the app will be visualized. This isn't meant to necessarily be a hey, this is the high fidelity mock-ups, right? No, as you can see here, a lot of this is just handwritten, right? And that's actually not a bad thing because, again, what happens is that by actually doing this wireframing, or what I would prefer to call sketching, it allows you to kind of think through your ideas, right? For example, maybe you're thinking of, oh, I'm just going to have this kind of laundry list. And then when you look at it, you say, well, wow, it's really hard to differentiate what's important in this list from the other items that are in this list as well. And so I always suggest and recommend that, yes, take time, draw it out. And again, these don't have to be super fancy. These can be something that you do in a Moleskine or in a set of field notes, or heck, it can even be on the back of printer paper. But if you are interested in, hey, I'd like something a bit more fancy when I draw, I actually recommend going to uistencils.com. There they have not only sort of these kind of these paper pads that have the sort of the outlines of a Windows Phone device or a Windows 8. They also do iOS and Android and different things. But they also even have these nice little metal stencils. And let me show this to you real quick. I'm gonna switch cameras here back to me. And so they even have these metal stencils that you can buy that again make it very easy for you to put in various glyphs and iconography as well as getting sizing on pixels and things like that. So I'd recommend it, but again, if you are just interested in having the piece of paper that just kind of has the outline of a Windows Phone or a Windows 8 device, they actually have those to download for free as well, and you can print out your own. And so they're a nice, fun little thing to have, but again, you don't have to go to major lengths. In fact, you can kind of take it as deep as you want to, like where you're actually doing these, wireframes in Photoshop, to again, something you're basically using, pen and paper. And surprisingly, pen and paper still work in this crazy digital world that we live in. Now, the second part of the wireframing is this concept of iteration. Because what you want to do is at this time is you want to sort of think through, and I actually tell people, play around with it. Think about if that piece of paper was a device and what you think that would look like. Now, don't sort of take wireframes as a way to get review and sign off for. So there's been a lot of people who are kind of dismissing wireframing a bit and saying, hey, it's kind of a waste of time. And from the research, really where sort of the waste of time comes from is when you ask people to look at them and go, what do you think? Do you like this? Because people have bias to say good things. So very rarely will you find someone giving you the type of critique that you need. Not to say that you can't do it with these hand-drawn wireframes, but you should, take it with a grain of salt, the feedback that you get. But from a perspective of, hey, how am I going to lay things out? What is the hierarchy? What am I going to have in different panels? That's absolutely something that wireframing can help support. So we always recommend, do those wireframes, and then, go through that again iteration process of figuring out, like, does this make sense? Does that make sense before you actually commit to writing the code? Then, once you've done that, you can actually begin sort of refining. And this is where you can actually start getting pretty digital now, where you can kind of create digital representations of what you think that it's going to look like. And some people, they say, hey, don't use Photoshop, just go ahead and build it directly. And that's fine. Whatever you feel that works the best for you. But what you do want to do is you want to be able to comfortably sort of refine and look at things in different ways. One of the things that we do is we actually have a product called Expression Design. It isn't in production anymore. We're not updating it, but it's a really good free tool if you are designing apps. And it's free, so you don't have to pay the hundreds upon hundreds of dollars for something that you really just want to sort of draw and kind of think things through visually. Also, too, it gives you a time to think about colors and what a color palette you want to use. Imagery, photography, what are the different types of interactions you can have on each of the pages? Do we have it look differently when we go from landscape mode to portrait mode? So, like for example, you can see here on this slide, at the end, we can actually look at this in a horizontal mode, and we actually get our golf scores versus the other information that we have when it's more appropriate in portrait mode. And so this is your time to sort of refine and finesse and figure things out. And then again, this is where you probably will be more willing to get direct feedback, because one of the things that I find is that in the wireframing phase, a lot of times people will say that looks good, and it's because they're busy, they don't have as deep enough time to think through it. What I find is when we get to this refine period, this is where you really start to see where people will come out, and you'll see the more visceral reactions to things, the color of green and things like that. And it's at this point too that you want to make sure that when you're getting feedback, that you're getting feedback that isn't just subjective or taste, right? So it can't be, oh, I don't like that shade of green. I like more of a hunter green. That's not something you can really work with. It's so when you're looking for feedback, you might want to be very specific about the feedback that you're looking for, because there may be some stuff you can't change, right? Maybe like the client has said, hey, this is the color palette we use. Here's the images that we have to use. There may be some things that are very constrained. So one of the things I always like to do is when I'm asking for feedback is I'll really kind of keep the feedback as, hey, I'm looking at these five particular things that I'd love for you to look at. Of course, if you have something else, let me know. But really what I'm focused in on is these five things. And what you'll find is you'll get much better feedback, based on that. So that's basically the design thinking that we do for apps. And again, this is a lot of times before you're even going to start writing code. And you may think, well, this is all just, I've already got this in my head. I took a shower this morning, and when I was in the shower, I figured all of this out. And that's fine if you think that's how you want to approach it. But we think that this is a good way to make sure that not only are you saving yourself from getting further down the road and kind of catching a design mistake, and having to spend more time fixing it later than finding out beforehand. Also, too, what happens a lot of times is you get too far down the road where you can't really take people's feedback. So, for example, a lot of times what will happen is right before a product is about to come out, that's when people will say, "We're looking for your feedback." Well, are you really? Because if you're going to be, you're going out in the next, week or two, you're really not going to have time to not only implement something new or to change something, but also to test it out in time. So again, what's nice is you can get a lot of the feedback mechanisms that you need early in the process where it doesn't cost as much. So next, what I want to do is I wanted to talk about embracing our design principles. And so One of the things that's always a challenge is that when you're building apps, a lot of times the excitement of just getting the app done is what people are kind of striving for. Hey, I want to build an app real quickly. I want to get it in the store, because I think I have a great idea. But then then after you get sort of that feedback and you're getting, 1 stars, 2 stars, it can be a little bit disappointing. And you may even be questioning, like, wow, I really thought I had a great idea. Why didn't everybody else think that this idea was so great? And a lot of times where the breakdown happens is that you were such in a rush to get the app out that you really didn't sort of think of those sort of small things. Like how are things laid out? What are the things that people expect? How easy is it for me to cognitively find what it is that I'm looking for? So here, for example, if you see this, weather app, you can see a few things, right? Where it seems very textual, right? And then also too, like even the icons sort of take away from the temperature, which is when you're looking at weather, usually you're looking at temperature. You're not looking at, hey, how sunny is that sun or how cloudy are those clouds? And we'll talk about that in more detail because you may decide that that's what makes your app different than everyone else's. But we'll talk about that some more. So Microsoft actually began putting together a set of design principles. And these design principles cross a lot of different types of platforms within Microsoft. So we use these when we think about Windows, when we think about Windows Phone, when we think about the Xbox. And what's nice about these principles is that you can actually take these principles and you can apply them to non-Microsoft things. So when I design for other platforms, I actually think about these 5 things as well, because just because I may be on a different platform or looking at a different, a thing, I'm still going to think about these. And in fact, even when I think about, hey, what am I doing, for a write-up of a project that I'm going to do, I still think of these things and say, where do these fit? And that's the great thing about design principles is that they're not necessarily, these things that you only apply in one way. You can apply them in different ways. And the thing that I do want to say is that as you're thinking of design and design principles and how you design your app, don't think of these as edicts. Because I think, like, if you were around sort of in the first year of Windows 8, you probably got the idea that, like, we were being very dictatorial about here's how you design things and it has to look like this. And we even saw that in, with Windows Phone, where people were like, no, you should only use Sago. You should never do, anything else. You should always use a panorama, nothing else. And like they were very dictatorial. And what I find is that these are good for when you're starting out, but also feel free to branch out a bit. And try new things, because what happens is that's how we sort of learn, that's how we sort of evolve. And so again, my kind of takeaway is make sure that you don't look at our, design guidance as edicts. Look at it as, hey, these are guidelines that I can subscribe to that will make sure that I, stay in the right direction. But if I find something that's sort of unique and different that I want to differentiate my app with, then feel free to. But the good part is that if you look at these design principles, even if you kind of go outside of what we would call our guidance, you still should be falling into these principles because they're definitely at, a more higher level. So let's talk through these. So the first one we're going to talk about is being authentically digital. And I apologize, like I re even remember the first time someone said, we have this design principle about being authentically digital. I was like, wow, this really reeks of a marketing statement. But then as they sort of delved into it, like it did make sense. Which was being authentically digital is making sure that you're taking advantage of the digital medium. And like part of that was, hey, for example, do icons represent, the icons themselves, and or a representation of a real life thing, or is it something that's more about sort of a reference, a cognitive reference? And so we always say, like, don't pretend to be something you're not. And so, for example, one of the things that we always look at is iconography. And over the years, icons have become this, very, art slash technical slash, visual thing that we spent a lot of time on. And I mean, I talk to iconographers, and it's amazing the amount of work that they did. But a lot of the time, what they were doing is they were spending most of their time on fidelity, right? Like, hey, we want this calculator to look and feel like a calculator. And you have to remember the reason why was because, back in the day, maybe I'm showing my age here, but back in the day when computers first came about, computers were very scary to people. I remember, I had a family member who they actually removed their delete key because they thought that if they accidentally pressed it, it would delete everything on their computer. And so you have to remember that, there was a significant amount of change for a lot of people who were coming from a very analog world where a calculator was a calculator. And by the way, I was on the train last week, and I actually a lady pulled out a tin key, and I was just like so impressed by it. And I was like, wow, that's so artisanal way of doing accounting. But sorry to digress. When you're thinking about iconography, we now know that people cognitively can understand that maybe I don't need to have a full high-def version of a particular icon, but instead I can have iconographic representations. And so when we look at these, most people would notice that these are pretty much representative of what we saw: a calculator, document, calendar, and mail. And the good part is that they, when also aligned with, in an app with all of the other things like text and visuals and things like that, what's nice about these is they don't take away from the content. Because remember, people aren't necessarily going to your app to like go, oh wow, your icons are so beautiful. Really, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get something done and get to the things that they care about. So things like iconography should represent something and be sort of wayfinders, but they really should be something that kind of draws the eye and draws people away from their content. Also, just one last thing about authentically digital. One of the things that comes up all the time is, oh, what you really mean is that this skeuomorphic way that we've been doing things is bad, and this kind of minimal iconographic way of doing things is much better. I don't want to say that because I think that sometimes it does make sense that, you have, things that sort of represent others. Again, if you look at gaming, for example, you wouldn't want to have it just be all iconography unless that was kind of your thing that you wanted to do with your game. But it does make sense sometimes to have it skeuomorphic. Sometimes it makes more sense to have it flat. What I would say is, again, focus on those design that design principles, and does it make sense for it to be, digital? Do I need to should I represent it in a skeuomorphic way, or should I represent it in a more iconographic way? And I think what you'll find is if you're doing it as a response to what your users need, you'll always end up making the right decision. So the second principle is do more with less. First off, focus on what you're good at. So what we usually mean by this is, when you're creating something, create sort of what we call that minimum viable product. What is the absolute essence of what you need to build to have a good functional quality app? Don't layer it with features upon features upon features, because, as you know, that's just much more cognitive overload, and a lot of people just won't even use those things that you think that, wow, I spent all my time on, and then you find out, wow, they didn't even really use that. So again, focus minimally on the things that you need to get done. And then, of course, because of the way that the app model works, where people, enjoy getting updates, you can then add those features that you think were, kind of priority twos. You can now put those in as well. Also, focus in on your content, not the Chrome. And you've seen good examples of this where on Windows 8, for example, we try to get rid of a lot of that stuff that, things like menu bars and, toolbars and, file menus and things like that. And we sort of get them out of the way as much as possible. So again, that people can focus in on what they came for, which is the content of your app or the thing that we need to do. And then also to, let the content breathe. Content is like wine. It needs to breathe. And we'll talk about that. So here, for example, you actually see kind of some older screenshots of apps that were on Windows Phone or on Windows Mobile at the time. And as you can see, they're very, very busy, right? So for example, when I look on the left side, I'm looking at caller information and really what I just need to know is the phone number that the person is calling, that ominous, creepy looking guy in the background. Do I really need that there when with the light behind him and all that? No, doesn't really make a lot of sense that we have that. And you can see the same thing on the right. And this was a lot because we were just thinking like, hey, we need to just kind of jam everything in because we wanted to make it easily, found affordances. I wouldn't necessarily do that. Again, if you find yourself trying to jam everything into the screen, you are probably just trying to put too much in there. And so you need to think about what minimally do I need there? Like, for example, do I really need the speaker information? Do I really need a lot of the iconography that that I've seen before? And so compare that to what you see now, where like if you look on the left-hand side, here is sort of the intro screen to your phone, where I can see information very quickly, right? I can see that there's time. I can see that there's an actual alarm that I've set. I don't need that, clock to look like high fidelity, clock. It's just one of those things where it just indicates to me, yes, I have an alarm. And it's very easy to see this, right? And like I can even see like what my next where my next meeting is at, and of course how many emails and things that I have, which by the way, 18 emails, that's like awesome. I would love to have 18 emails only. But then also too on the right-hand side, you can see here where when we wanted to do something with a picture in our camera roll, instead of making every different type of option available right on the screen as you load up the camera roll app, instead what we do is we say, oh, contextually, when we're ready to select something, we know we want to do something. Because with the camera roll, maybe what I want to do is be able just to review a lot of pictures. So I want to take advantage of the screen space that I have to see my pictures versus, again, putting everything on the canvas. Pride in craftsmanship is another design principle that we look at. And there's sort of an kind of overview of this, which is, hey, sweat the details, sweat, I always use the term sweat the pixels. And really what it just means is that details matter, right? Like people, when they love your app, they're looking at it every day. It's a part of their life, and you can't take you can't take that lightly because this is people again who are taking time out of their day to really engage with something that you've built, and so you need to look at all of those little details that matter. So things like type weight, size, and how those things convey hierarchy and what's important and what's not. Also, how do we guide layout and how do we align things to a grid? And again, like I said, the details matter. Sweat those pixels. So, for example, you can see on the left side, that view is not bad necessarily because of the Comic Sans, although that does make it horrible. The interesting thing here is that if you were to look at the name of the app, the pivots, the name of the pivots, the actual content itself, you'll notice that there's not a lot of differentiation. So your eye really doesn't know where to go to. Your eye just sort of hits it and kind of tries to take in everything, right? Whereas if you look on the right side, one is you see that, wow, okay, weather, that's the name of the app, in San Francisco. here's the particular day. And you really get a sense very quickly what this is. In fact, I bet you if we change this to a different language altogether, let's say, whatever language you would like, we probably still would be able to figure out, oh, I bet that is a weather app. Whereas over on the left side, we probably still wouldn't be able to do that. Also, the thing too you'll notice is that we actually align our content onto a grid. And you may say, well, I try to line it up the best I can. Well, you can't expect anything more from me. But what's interesting is that when you look at the way people think, people love structure. Even people who are unstructured, in a way, look for structure. We look for structure in our environments. And so what happens a lot of times is that, I've actually did this test with a friend one time where I showed them two things and I of the exact same thing. The only thing I did was I changed the grid on it. One aligned to a grid, one didn't. And I said, what's the difference between these two? And they were like, I can't really figure out what the difference is. They just look different, and that one looks odd. And they, of course, they were pointing to the one that wasn't aligned to a grid. And that was very interesting that just even a person who, didn't have a design background, didn't understand grids and layouts and all that, could see that the thing with that, the app without the grid or the image without the grid actually looked off. They couldn't really explain it, but they just kind of knew it was off. So again, you want to make sure that you go in and you sweat those details. And so here, for example, if you see on the left-hand side, that messaging app now makes a whole lot more sense for us because we can see, oh, these are conversations we have as a part of the messaging app. I can even see that, oh, I have new ones because those are colored differently. Another design principle is the concept of being fast and fluid. And this is in turn of how responsive does my app feel? Is there motion as a part of the app? And it's kind of interesting because a lot of times what happens is we spend a lot of time making our app kind of look fun, right? But then people get annoyed very quickly, right? Because they're like, hey, I just want to bring up my app. I don't want it, flying in from the clouds and then, a bunch of light bursts happen and then my app shows up. Like that would be fun, like the very first time, but then after that it would get annoying because again, people want to get to their app and do things. But also too, when you start designing in this kind of flat, design motif, what you'll find is that people do need animation and they do need motion as to make it feel like it's interacting. Because again, remember we're dealing with digital things where at the end of the day we're tapping on glass. So we need that motion to kind of give us a sense of what's happening. So here, for example, hopefully you can see it a bit, and I'll play it again. But when I'm actually going to go and select a particular email to read, you'll notice that it just does a really quick what looks like a push. And again, I'll do that to take me where I want. And then when it brings it up, you'll notice that it kind of slides in versus just appearing. Because when things just appear, it is slightly jarring. I mean, look at horror movies. That's kind of one of the things they do, right? They show you an empty doorway, and then the very next second, the scary creature is in the doorway. But you don't want that in your app, unless you're building a horror app. But you don't want that in your app. So you want to give people the ability to know that, hey, it responded to what I did, because people want to know that, hey, when I did something, it did react to the thing that I did. And I'm not having to second guess, hey, did it really do this or not? And that's when, of course, you have people who will start double tapping and triple tapping because they just didn't see anything happen. And maybe your app has to go get data off the server and, it's just doing its thing, but they had no idea that your app actually responded to what they wanted. The other thing you can do is you can actually use motion to kind of create really interesting, graphics. So, for example, in the one on the right, what it does is it tells you how much you've drank. And it uses that bottle filling as a way to do that. Now, could you have maybe done it in a more flat way? Of course, you probably could. But it's kind of a really creative thing. And as you can imagine, with this kind of app, that's going to be stylistically acceptable to the user for it. And so there are times that you can use it, again, very simple motion mechanics to kind of give your app some life and some kind of surprise and interest. The final design principle we'll talk about is win as one. And so what this really is about is taking advantage of the platform that you're on. As you can imagine, I mean, we've seen over the years of things where we could absolutely tell what it was written in, right? So we would be like, oh, this is a Java app because it looked like a Java app, right? No matter what platform you were on. I think if you go so far back to look at the Turbo Pascal days of Windows, you could look at an OK button and a cancel button and you would know, oh yes, this was written with Pascal because of the look that it had, no matter what platform that it was on. So what we always say is you need to always take advantage of the platform. What you don't want to do is to design for a particular platform and then just simply port the look and feel over to another platform. Because what might happen is you might learn, th people will learn things on a platform of how things work. And then when your app acts different, it seems like the odd one out, right? And like a good example of this was when people were porting iOS apps to Windows 8, or I'm sorry, Mac apps to Windows 8 as well. What happened was people were used to going and swiping from the right and clicking on settings to find the settings for their app. They weren't used to kind of drilling down into a file system. So there were some challenges around that. And the good part, though, is that we're now actually starting to see a lot of third parties that sort of present themselves as, hey, you can write your app in the language of your choice, and then it will run on different platforms. And you can think of like PhoneGap and folks like Xamarin. And like Xamarin is pretty interesting because what they actually do is when they build a button on the different platforms, they don't do an owner draw button, which usually was, hey, we're going to kind of draw the button for you and we will sort of handle all of the mechanics of that button. And instead, what you have is what I think Xamarin does it a really good job of is I'm going to use a native button. So whatever the button is on Windows, I will use that for the Windows app. If it is a iOS app, I'm going to use the button from there. And what happens is one is that you're now not having to thunk through a few layers of code and libraries for your performance. But then again, you're also giving people what they expect because a lot of us are multi-platform and we can switch back and forth very easily, but there are a lot of people out there who are still on one platform, and what they want is they want to find something that is very similar to them and warm to them, and so you want to take advantage of that platform. And so, for example, in Windows, you can take advantage of these concepts of live tiles. And so you've seen it in Windows, and you even see it in Windows Phone. And so here, for example, in Windows Phone, you can actually usually decide on, hey, how do I want these tiles to show themselves? Because they're not just, standard icon images. They are, small, they are medium, they are wide, and they can also have data that gets updated, right? So for example, on the flip version of the live tile, you can actually go from an image to text. You can also cycle through different pictures as well. One of the things I thought was very, very cool was there's an app called Bad Traffic. It's a game on Windows Phone, and what happens is in the game you can collect these cars, and then what they actually do is they actually create an image for your live tile that shows you the cars that you own. And I just thought that was just a very unique way to think about that live tile. And what's interesting is we're getting a lot more people people who are sort of expecting those tiles. And what you see here is just again another example of, we're at the point now where we don't sort of just build for one type of device. We actually build across platforms. And in fact, we're even now starting to see a lot of people who are even building on multi-vendor platforms, right? So it's not unusual for someone to say, hey, we're going to build a Windows 8 and Windows Phone app, but then we're also going to build an iOS version, a Mac version, an Android version, a Firefox OS version, if you will. You're going to see more and more of that. We've tried to make it very easy. We now have this concept of universal apps, where you have a project template in Visual Studio that basically allows you to build one project, but that will go and create a version for the phone and for desktops and things like that. Now, this does mean that we have a bit of a challenge, right? And the web folks face this with the concept of responsive design. But I think that it's spot on that we actually are going to be doing this sort of in the so-called native world as well, which is we don't really know who's coming to us and what type of projects or what kind of device that they may have. And so we need to think of our UIs as being somewhat fluid. Right? So I need to think about, hey, what if this person only has 320 pixels? What if they, have a huge screen? Maybe they're, 1900 by 2600 or what have you. And we have to be fairly comfortable with that. And there's a lot of great tools and things that are out there now that make it much easier. And we'll start seeing those things as we move forward. And of course, Microsoft is going to be doing a lot of events like this and online that will talk about how to make that transition easier from being sort of a one device app to being an app that, can run on a variety of different devices and form factors, and even form factors that don't even, exist yet or not yet available for everyone. So let me tell you about a few resources. I talked a little bit about expression design. If you don't have a digital design tool like Photoshop or what have you, expression design is free. Like I said, we aren't working on expression design anymore, but it is a tool that you can absolutely use, and it has a lot of great feature sets into it. And again, the best thing is that it's absolutely free. You don't have to sign up for anything, what have you. It's just free. If you're interested in knowing more about the things that we are talking about and thinking about with design and design events that we have, please go to Microsoft Canada's website, Woot Studio, at wootstudio.ca. There's actually a little design button that you can click on there that just shows you the topics around design. Of course, check out the official design docs as well. There's a lot of good stuff there, and in fact, there's a bunch of templates that you can download. So if you want to, if you want to like look at all the different types of visual motion stuff that we have, you can look at examples of those. You can download templates and all kinds of good stuff. And then again, if you wanted to kind of dive in much deeper, I believe there's it's either 6 or 8 hours, I can't remember, but it's a design boot camp. It's on Microsoft Virtual Academy, and you can get to it by going to this URL here. And that'll take you to the design boot camp, and you can dive into these very deep, and you can look in at code and blend and things like that. So with that, I am done, and talking about the things that I had on here, I was just going to see real quick if we had any Q&A here. Let's see. So it does look like we have a question from Christian. Here's a question. How does desktop really fit in? I find myself often in trouble thinking up UIs for desktop because there's no pinch to zoom and swipes. It has to work with keyboard and mice. Any ideas to work around that? That's interesting because what is happening is that there are people who are starting to expect to be able to interact at all points. So, if they're using keyboard and mouse, that they can interact with your app with that. If there is touch enabled, if you have touch available to you, you can take advantage of that as well. One of the things that we have changed a little bit, I know on the Windows 8 side of the house, is we did change it where you can define that your app only supports one or the other, because there were folks who were saying, wow, I'm never going to get my app out if I have to do all three, and there were times where it maybe didn't necessarily make sense. So you do have that ability to go in and select, you know, how you want to approach that. But yeah, there is going to be the challenge of learning, hey, how do I support these different things? And in the documentation online, depending on if you're Windows 8 or Windows Phone, there is some help there for you on that. Another question from the chat, are there any Sketchflow templates for Windows Phone 8 on Visual Studio 2013? I would have to check on that. I could have sworn that I did see that where someone actually showed Sketchflow using that. But again, don't quote me on that. I'll actually come back and give folks an answer to that. Let's see. Do you prefer native development or hybrid development? That's a good question. And what I'm going to do is I think I'll sort of define hybrid because I think it means different things to different people. And so hybrid development typically means that you have a lot of the infrastructure built in as a website, but that content is brought through a native app. And there's actually sort of two ways that you can go about this. So one is, hey, all of my infrastructure is sort of in the cloud, right? I have these web service endpoints that are in the cloud, and basically I have a client that is just responsible for calling those endpoints and bringing data back and forth. There's also a new sort of hybrid app, which is what we use called web app templates, which is basically a sort of shell around a website that not only allows you to run the website kind of native on the on your computer, but also allows you to do things like you can actually change up the CSS. I used to say, I don't think that's a good thing. But now with the web application template, and you can go to CodePlex or you can Google Bing web app template and you can find it. I changed my mind. I actually think that you can actually build a very strong, solid app with the web application template because it has a lot of great stuff in there. I will be around, of course, for the chat as well. So I can go in and add some more commentary there, because I know what we want to do is take a little bit of a break. So we're going to take a break for 10 minutes. We're actually going to connect to our good friends in Toronto, and you'll be talking with Mickey on another topic about making your apps better. So again, I want to thank everyone very much for being a part of the conversation. And like I said, we're very happy and, you know, and that you took this time to spend with us. And yeah, keep those questions coming, and we'll be talking some more. Thank you very much.